they were told by the very doctors they sought out to treat our bodies that we were the only ones like us and that we should never tell anybody else about our queer bodies and how we were born. And of course, anytime you have lies in a family, bad things will probably happen over time. And in fact, they do happen, and they still happen. We're gay, we're lesbian, we're bi, we're trans, we're straight, we're asexual. Every kind of variation out there is how we identify.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Bermuda backtracks from marriage to partnerships, a Chilean trans victory secures identity rights, and an intersex activist takes the driver's seat. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 2nd, 2018. Bermuda became the first country in the world on June 1st to overturn marriage equality and replace it with what its proponents called marriage-equivalent domestic partnerships. Lawmakers took the action in December, but a variety of circumstances allowed same-gender couples to continue to marry until the repeal took effect on June 1st. Two challenges to the repeal were heard in late May in Bermuda's Supreme Court, the same court that had ruled for marriage equality in May 2017. But as we record this newscast on June 2nd, and even though Chief Justice Ian Quayle was aware of that looming June 1st deadline, rulings have yet to be announced. Addressing deep-seated societal prejudices, Zakiya Lord of Out Bermuda called being a gay person on the island an act of bravery every day. She told the Royal Gazette that the highly publicized court cases are a win for all the young LGBTQ kids that are out there. They are looking at us as the generation above them. We are showing up for them with our voices, with our visibility, and with our money.
A Hong Kong appeals court has overturned a landmark ruling that had extended the same legal recognition to lesbian and gay marrieds that heterosexual couples automatically enjoy. In 2015, Angus Lung Chun Kwong sued the Immigration Department, where he'd worked since 2002, for refusing to recognize his legal marriage to Scott Adams in New Zealand in 2014. Lung won the battle against his now former employer in the Court of First Instance, which agreed that the Immigration Department's refusal to grant equal spousal benefits to Adams violated Hong Kong's constitution and was illegal sexual orientation-based bias. But the Court of Appeal overturned that decision on June 1st, ruling that the government, not just as an employer but as a custodian of Hong Kong's prevailing socio-moral values, had the right to protect the traditional institution of marriage. Judge Jeremy Poon wrote that ruling for the gay couple would be perceived by many to undermine the status of marriage. Lung told reporters that he and Adams were deeply disappointed by the ruling and called it a step back for equality. This week's ruling comes just days before the Immigration Department again heads to the final Court of Appeal, this time challenging a lower court decision that granted a spousal dependent visa to the British wife of a lesbian working in Hong Kong. If that ruling is also overturned, legal same-gender spouses will only be able to get tourist visas to stay in the city.
But Ecuador's constitutional court this week ordered that a 7-year-old girl be registered with both surnames of her two mothers. Sadia Amani Bicknell Rathon will soon be officially identified as the daughter of Helen Bicknell and Nicola Rathon. The South American country created civil unions for same-gender couples like Bicknell and Rathon in 2015, but adoption, surrogacy, and other parental issues for those couples have remained undefined. Judge Tatiana Ordinana wrote that all children seeking registration should be allowed to do so, regardless of the type of family they're in. One of the lawyers involved in the case, Jose Luis Guerra, told reporters that the ruling was a significant advance in recognizing the diversity of families in Ecuador. According to Telesur English, Satya is Nicola's biological daughter, and the couple is also parenting Arundel, the biological son of Helen. Of the case that was originally filed in 2012, Bicknell said at a press conference that, "We knew we were going to win, but we did not know when."
Chile's Supreme Court gave LGBTQ activists a double win in a single ruling this week. It decided that trans people should be allowed to change their legal gender without medical intervention of any kind, including surgery. The legal clinic of the Law School of the University of Chile, led by Professor Lorena Lorca, won the appeal of a lower court ruling that had rejected the case. She told a press conference that the decision is not only historic, but that her law clinic is representing 90 other trans people seeking to change their legal gender without surgery. The nation's highest court said that while Chile has no specific legislation regulating a legal change of gender, it has the responsibility to uphold human rights principles and human rights treaties it had ratified, including the January Inter-American Court of Human Rights ruling that requires signatories like Chile to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Professor Lorca explained that such international treaties oblige the judicial branch to apply them, even more if it is considered that there is no legal norm that can solve the case.
Two court cases are making news in the United States. In one, the losing side in an employment discrimination case involving the late openly gay skydiving instructor Daniel Zarda has asked the Supreme Court to review that lower court decision. Long Island, New York-based Altitude Express is challenging a February ruling by the entire U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals that it discriminated against employee Zarda for firing him after he came out to one of their clients. The court ruled 10-3 that the termination violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that bans discrimination based on sex. It echoed decisions by a number of other federal courts that those protections extend to sexual orientation and gender identity. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals previously decided that lesbian, gay, and bisexual people are protected. Meanwhile, the Sixth Circuit Court ruled that gender identity is a protected class. Supreme Court justices refused to review an 11th Circuit Court ruling in December that found gender nonconformity is covered by sex bias laws, but that sexual orientation itself is not. Most observers believe it's only a matter of time before the Supreme Court is forced to address these workplace bias issues.
In the second case, a sergeant in the U.S. Army who served in Afghanistan and Kuwait is suing the Pentagon for its policies that virtually ban military service by enlistees who are HIV positive. Sergeant Nick Harrison, who's in the Army National Guard, says he faces possible discharge because he's living with HIV. The trained attorney says he was denied a position in the Judge Advocate General Corps because current Pentagon regulations consider service members living with HIV to be non-deployable. And under a policy enacted earlier this year, service members who are considered non-deployable for more than 12 consecutive months are targeted for discharge. "I spent years acquiring the training and skills to serve my country as a lawyer," Harrison says. "It's frustrating to be turned away by the country I have served since I was 23 years old, especially because my HIV has no effect on my service." In a related case, also filed by Lambda Legal and OutServe SLDN, an anonymous service member living with HIV is challenging the denial of his commission in the Air Force, even though medical personnel supported it.
And finally, two outspoken queer U.S. teens are among the notable members of the high school graduating class of 2018. After first being denied his request, Allen High School Texas graduate Jay Alfie was allowed to hear his chosen name when each student received his diploma on June 1st. He's been using Jay since he came out as trans during his freshman year. Students, teachers, and staff all know him as Jay. After being told by a school administrator that he could not graduate with his chosen name, family members started an online campaign on his behalf. In a last-minute statement, school superintendent Scott Niven noted that Jay had been seeking a legal change of name for several months, but that the paperwork had been delayed due to circumstances beyond the family's control. So the request to change the name at graduation will be honored.
and an openly gay high school valedictorian in Covington, Kentucky, praised student activism, including the fight for stronger gun laws by school shooting survivors in Florida, urging his fellow graduates to continue to utilize our voices. However, Holy Cross High School valedictorian Christian Bales was forced to give his commencement address through a bullhorn outside the graduation venue after officials with the local Roman Catholic diocese decided that parts of his speech were too political and not in keeping with church teachings. A large group of fellow students gathered on the lawn to hear the speech. Undeterred by the attempted censorship, Bales concluded with a call for continued youth activism.
We must plan to continue to utilize our voices in order to better the lives of all those we encounter, all of them. Class of 2018, we are dynamic, and we are intelligent. We have a voice, and we're capable of using it in all communities. We must take what we've learned in this community and apply it to the world we are about to encounter, because we are the young people, and we will continue to win. Thank you.
Covington, Kentucky High School valedictorian Christian Bales.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending June 2nd, 2018. Written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the all-new thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Carol Myers.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra.
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple, but the decision was not definitive on the broader issue of religious-based discrimination in the marketplace. Instead, the court found that in this particular case, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had been openly antagonistic toward religion in its ruling against the baker. Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote in the court's 7-2 decision that future cases would need to be determined with tolerance, without undue respect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. We'll have complete coverage of the Supreme Court ruling on the next This Way Out. The world was a lonely place for Betsy Driver until she started an online community for people who, like herself, were born with intersex variations. She'll never be lonely again now that she's become an international activist, and even met up with This Way Out Sydney, Australia correspondent Barry McKay during her travels.
The I in LGBTIQ may be a fairly recent addition to the alphabet that makes up the spectrum of non-heteronormative sexual identities, but what does it mean to be a person born with an intersex variation, and what issues face those who were born this way? I spoke to Betsy Driver, an international intersex activist who began intersex activism in the US in the 1990s. She was in Australia at Sydney's Lesbian and Gay Mardi Gras when I caught up with her.
I've been doing intersex activism since 2001. I started the first online international intersex forum for people with intersex variations to meet each other. It was truly transforming to a lot of people. In fact, that work I did in 2001 gave birth to many of the intersex activists you learn today. The reason I started this organization was because I was struggling with my own intersex variations, having been born in the mid-60s with a body that did not fit into standard medicalized definitions of male or female. Horrible surgeries were done to me as a child, including the complete amputation of my clitoris when I was 8 months old. When I hit my mid-30s, it became a matter of survival. I needed to find somebody else that was like me. And the internet was young, and I thought, I'm going to put something online and see what turns up. It really, truly gave birth to the intersex movement in many ways, as well as the brought light to the personal side of our intersex stories. It helps break the shame and the secrecy that so many of us grew up with and the lies we grew up with. And it's not necessarily our parents' lies that we grew up with. However, they were often willing or unwilling accomplices to those lies. They were told by the very doctors they sought out to treat our bodies that we were either the only ones like us and that we should never tell anybody else about our queer bodies and how we were born. And of course, anytime you have lies in a family, bad things will probably happen over time. And in fact, they do happen, and they still happen.
I asked Betsy how she would define the word intersex.
Intersex, it's not nearly as complicated as it seems. On the medical side, it means being born with a body that falls outside of the standard definitions of what falls into that binary sex designation. You know, the medicalized definition of that is a baby girl is born with a vagina, and when I say baby girl, I mean an XX baby girl is born with a vagina, and an XY baby boy is born with a penis and testicles. However, sometimes you'll have a baby girl that's born with a large clitoris, or you'll have a XY person born looking very physically female at birth because their body does not respond to testosterone. There are also genetic variations. You might have somebody who is XXXY or XXXY. There's several different varieties. It's somewhere, I think, around 30 different varieties of intersex that have been identified so far. Some of them are genetic in nature. Some of them are not. Some of them just happen, and they get discovered. Some of the babies born with an intersex variations are identified at birth. Some of them are not identified until puberty. Some of them might not be identified until adulthood. And some people are never identified. They just grow up knowing that they have a body that does not respond like their friends are doing, say through puberty or through young adulthood, and have other issues. Sometimes they'll seek medical care for another problem and it gets discovered. So there's a lot of different ways that it can be found in nature. From the social side, many of us define intersex not from the medicalized side, because that we find that to be pathologizing and it makes us a medical oddity. We look at it instead as the lived experience of being born into a body that does not meet society's expectations of what they believe male or female should be. It's important to note that while some people with intersex variations identify as intersex, intersex is generally not thought of as a gender. However, many people do. We identify as male, we identify as female, we identify cisgender, we identify trans, we identify intersex. The one thing, the intersectionality and all that, is that we all were born with a body that fell outside of what was expected. We're gay, we're lesbian, we're bi, we're trans, we're everything in that alphabet that people think about when they think LGBTI, and we're not in that alphabet sometimes, other than the I.
Can this affect people's mental health?
It can. It can affect mental health, very much so. And the reason for that is very often the psychosocial side of us are not treated. We're considered to be a medical issue, and our mental health is often ignored. It causes very big problems with people. Many of those problems are, as I mentioned, the shame and the secrets about our bodies and how we were born. Many of us are subjected to surgeries without our consent. You might have somebody with AIS who looks very female at birth but may have gonadal tissue, and that gonadal tissue is often removed under the guise of it being cancerous, or they'll call it a hernia, when it's not. It's actually functioning gonadal tissue that produces hormones that are very healthy for a person. Then they have to take hormones the rest of their life. They have to do hormone replacement. So there's a lot of different issues. The biggest one that we as intersex advocates probably work towards is eliminating non-consensual surgeries done on children, often at an early age. We're not against surgeries. We just believe that the person who owns that body, who is living in that body, should be the person to participate in whether or not that body should be cut to fit standard male or female definitions of what someone's body should look like.
How does homophobia and transphobia affect the identity of babies born with an intersex variation?
Yeah, one of the big issues that drives surgeries and surgical interventions on children born with intersex variations is homophobia and transphobia. Doctors often tell parents, and this still happens today, that if you allow your child to grow up, your baby girl to grow up with a big clitoris, she's going to identify as male. Or if you allow gonads to stay in an XY female-identified person who has AIS, that person will be confused because of the hormones that are being produced. There's a huge fear that the intersex body is also disruptive to the sexual binary of society. And so there's this feeling amongst medical professionals that it must be corrected. Those bodies must be corrected in order to fit in. It also is very heteronormative because you may have a baby girl or a child, female identified, who looks female, is identifying female, but does not have a vagina. When you build a vagina in a child, it's presuming, it's basically to create a receptacle for a penis. It's assuming that that child will grow up to be heterosexual. That's not often the case. Sometimes it is. There's no guarantee.
So an intersex person does not necessarily identify as one sexual orientation or another?
No, we're all over the map. We're gay, we're lesbian, we're bi, we're trans, we're straight, we're asexual. We are, every kind of variation out there is how we identify. We may identify male, we may identify female, we may identify as neither, we may identify as queer, we might identify as intersex. It's hard to say. And it really has nothing to do with any surgical interventions. In fact, sometimes those surgical interventions will just reinforce identities outside of the binary.
I'm Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia.
My name is Betsy Driver. I'm an independent intersex activist in the United States.
We have perhaps only in the last few years seen the letter I added to LGBTQ. I asked Betsy what she thought of that.
Oh, I have such mixed feelings about LGBTIQ. It's a good thing because it raises awareness. However, many organizations that add an I do it without any intersex representation. We have a saying amongst ourselves, not about us, without us. Meaning that if you're an organization that wants to add an I, you need to inquire with the intersex folks as to how that should be treated within your framework.
So intersex activism only really began in the 1990s.
It was about the 1990s. It really kind of came about because of the birth of the internet, and we were able to find each other. Pretty much all of us were told growing up that we were the only people out there like us. I actually discovered in my mid-30s that there was another child treated in the same hospital as I was, the same age as I was. I'm willing to bet that we shared the same waiting room, and the doctors, you know, just outright lied to both us and our parents, saying that there was nobody else out there. And, you know, I have congenital adrenal hyperplasia, which is one variety of intersex. It's one of the most common forms. It's about 1 in 15,000 people. You know, overall, intersex variations affect about 1 in 2,000 people. The CAH is a common one. To be sitting there and to learn that other kids were treated at the same hospital as I was devastating to me as an adult and really made it crystal clear how I was lied to.
Betsy Driver has taken her activism to the level of the United Nations.
I was at the UN recently. The independent expert for SOGI asked for testimony as to how he should proceed with his reports coming up. And a group of us went to the UN and testified about A, our own stories, and B, what's being done here in Australia as well as across Europe.
How are the UN treating the issue at the moment?
Excellent. They've really taken the lead on it. They did a report called the Free and Equal Report. I would encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about intersex to look that up. It's very inclusive and has great information in it.
How does the issue of intersexuality play out in third world countries?
You know, the model of treatment is very similar because the doctors have used the same textbooks. So the shame and the secrecy is quite often not that different than it is in other countries. There are some great intersex activists in third world countries. There is a guy, Julius, who is in Uganda, who's doing great work. And in fact, he recently came out. Open Society Foundation recently produced a video about him that's currently out available online. And he talks about his story. You know, I've heard stories, I can't confirm it though, that, you know, in some societies, intersex children that are visibly intersex at birth are often taken out and abandoned. You know, I know people who have adopted intersex children from China because their parents abandoned them due to their intersex variations. On the same vein, you have populations in certain communities of something called 5-ARD, which is a 5-alpha reductase deficiency. And that child will look female at birth and will often start to masculinize at puberty if it's not discovered. And in some societies, it's totally fine. It's expected and it's fine. And they're totally accepting of it. It really depends. Part of the other issue is it's a language issue, and different languages and different cultures call it different things. So as we sit here talking about intersex, that word may not work for other places because it's not a word that's in their language. You know, just like in some societies, gender's not part of their language. One thing I want to add, in 2006, the medical community got together for what they called a consensus statement as to how to treat people with intersex variations to try and make some kind of standard. In doing so, they renamed it, and they now call it disorders of sexual development, which is a very horrible, horrible definition for anyone to use. I don't consider myself to be disordered, even though I was born with an intersex body. Nobody I know that has an intersex variation would consider themselves to be disordered, and it just adds to the pathologizing and medicalization of our bodies and makes it easier for medical professionals to convince parents to allow their child to be operated on.
With Betsy Driver, an international intersex activist, I'm Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
Betsy Driver has added to her accomplishments by being elected to the Borough Council of Flemington, New Jersey, and she thinks that makes her only the second person in the world elected to public office who is open about their intersex status. Betsy Driver's website is bodieslikeours.org. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Carol Myers and Christopher Gall, with thanks to Brian DeShazer, and from Barry McKay. Garbage performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KHEN Salida, Colorado, WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, 4CCC Warwick, Queensland, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.